It's time for the Kick Around, the Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. 2 hours of HSOs on the clubs, leagues, and tournaments of the world's game. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is the Ticket. We're just kicking it around. Now, it's the Zico and Ted Eck of radio, Andy Swift and Peter Welton.
Hi-da-ho, P1s, and welcome to a very, very special World Cup qualifying podcast edition of The Kick Around. For you, the P1s that just love to sit around and talk soccer and all that implies, don't forget, you can also find us on our website, thekickaround.com. For those unfamiliar or new here, hello, my name is Peter. Good to speak to you. And with me is my soccer talking BFF, the Canadian Chilean, Andy Swift.
Officially neutral, right? Yes, I have to be neutral as a CONCACAF official, but yes, right, we'll leave it at that.
You know what? Let me share with the good listener that of anybody in the world that was texting me celebratory texts, it was my buddy Andy. So good points on you. And to bring in a third perspective, we've had him on the show before. He writes occasionally over at the Athletic. He's one of soccer media and soccer Twitter's cool kids. It's the amazing Will Parchman. Will, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. And I will say that I am definitely not neutral. So very, very much celebrating the team.
All right, as you should.
Just real quickly, I want to get into this. You picked up on something in a quote, a Tyler Adams quote yesterday, I think it was, and you asked somebody to pick up on this, and I volunteered. Boy, was this a big engine performance or what?
Yes. Hashtag big engines. You know, I'm going to expend every last ounce of the energy that I have, whatever social media influence that I have, meager as it may be, to pump up hashtag big engines.
Okay, so wait.
Merchandise,
you and I need to make an agreement. Is it big engines singular or big engines plural?
Oh, plural. It's got to be plural because we got multiple engines on this team. It's got to be. We're American soccer. Everybody's an engine. We all run very hard and very fast.
Andy, are you completely lost at what?
No. I've been following you, you two dweebs on social media talk about it. But you know what? I have got to agree. When Will first tweeted, I'm like, man, yes. You know, we're always looking for a way to describe
the American
way, right? The energy and grit and Aronson running around. Why did you describe Aronson earlier, Peter? Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah.
So macho and mechanical and powerful and big
engine. Big engine.
I can't believe it. It's another dose of zero. I can't believe it. This has happened again.
So when it was 1-0, did you start thinking, okay, this could be 2?
No, I was convinced.
No!
I predicted 1-1. I thought Mexico would find a way to sneak one in at the end there and make it 1-1. And you know what? I probably would have been okay with that. But what were you thinking, Will?
I was thinking what every American soccer fan who watched 2017 was thinking, that we will find a way to blow this. I've been bitten too many times over the last 3 to 4 years to get my hopes up, especially against Mexico. But man, it makes you think this team's a little different. Like maybe we're, and again, even saying that, I feel like a little slap on the back of my hand. Like you can't get optimistic, but you kind of have to, right? I mean, this team it's different. It feels different.
It really does feel different, and you know, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of weird consternation in U.S. soccer fan circles, because you know there's still a pretty significant faction of people who are very anti Greg Berhalter, but they got to give the guy credit because man, they delivered today in a game that really meant a lot in terms of the overall point to this, which is qualifying for Qatar.
Yeah, I think if you look back at the summer and those two wins against Mexico over the summer, that whole we beat the B team storyline was kind of in the back of everybody's head, right? It's like this is now a game that matters. This is the qualifier. This is their A team. This is when we have to do it to really show where we are. And they did, you know, despite, I think, the first 45 minutes showing a little bit of maybe nerves, young team nerves, but the confidence was there. And, you know, it is a different, you get a different feeling with this team.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think, you know, the big question was certainly without Gio Reyna, without Christian Pulisic, you know, you've got, of course, you have Tyler Adams, you've got Weston McKennie in the middle. You've got Musa, who's, you know, obviously was maybe the best player on the field tonight. And so you're wondering, okay, that's a lot of youth. I mean, I know, you know, Pulisic and McKennie play in two of the best teams in the world, and they've got all this experience. But, you know, if you actually look at their time on the field together in the national team, it's not a ton. So you're thinking, okay, can they pull this together and create sort of a cohesive midfield? You know, are the fullbacks up to it? You know, you had Yedlin and Robinson who both put in good shifts. You've got, you know, Walker and Miles Robinson in the middle who both put in good shifts. And none of these players, you know, if you look down the caps list of the players who started tonight, I mean, Yedlin, I think, is about 70 caps. But you go down from there, I mean, you're looking players in the teens, players in single digits. I mean, it's a young team, and it's not even a complete team. And, you know, I think for all of the, you know, slack that we've given Berhalter, you know, over the course of his first year or two, I think he's finally starting to pull it together, and you're starting to see some of this youth kind of finally tell. So, you know, again, it felt different. It just felt like a cohesive team for, you know, maybe the first time, you know, really in terms of looking, forecasting them for the World Cup. I mean, it kind of felt like, all right, maybe they could do something in Qatar.
You know, it's funny you mentioned this about Greg kind of turning a corner. My overall perception of this particular game is my biggest criticism of Berhalter, and I don't think I'm alone or special or unique in this thinking, is that Berhalter had been overcomplicating things for these guys, making it difficult for them to comprehend what it is he wanted them to do tactically and formation-wise. I felt like tonight, for many stretches of the game, overall, Berhalter had done exactly that. He had simplified the game. It was the players that were overcomplicating the game, trying to get a little too cute with little tucked-in passes there. I remember very distinctly a moment in the second half where Weston gets a ball in the attacking half on Mexico's side of the field, and he has somebody streaking down the left side, but he tries to cut the ball back into the middle, and he loses it. Those types of plays that I thought we saw several times, way too many times tonight on the United States side, and maybe that's a good thing, because maybe they're feeling their oats, they're feeling confident, and that ultimately may be a really good sign moving forward for this group of people.
I think the second half, that's especially true for the second half. I think the difference with this team, that difference that we're talking about, is that this team is much more confident than those teams of the past. I mean, they play with a swagger and a confidence that we haven't seen. And that was especially apparent in the second half. And sometimes it just, those kind of things lead to mistakes. I think the first half, and a lot of people were saying Mexico was much better in the first half, or they were the better team. I thought they were even in the first half, with one difference. Mexico was just more calm on the ball, and the U.S. just seemed more frantic on the ball. And that has nothing to do with confidence. That, to me, is just nerves. It's these young kids playing in their first big U.S.-Mexico game, and nerves got the best of them. In the second half, they calmed down. They played with that swagger, and it was all U.S. in that second half.
Well, I one of the kind of overlying themes to this game to me was the fact that this was a lineup of a very young U.S. lineup matched up against an experienced, not an old, but an experienced Mexico lineup that was also missing a few key players. So seeing the U.S. play almost in a very front foot state of mind, at least for me, was relieving. I was really excited to see them high press and show up with some energy in the first half, despite the fact there's some guys that are still less than 10 World Cup qualifiers under their belt playing for the U.S. tonight.
Yeah, and I think Andy hit it dead on. You know, I think, you know, you look at the confidence these players have, and I think it's too easy to say, oh, well, you know, you look at someone like a Yunus Musa, who's, you know, played on big stages. He's played, at the very least, he's played in systems that have, you know, or quote-unquote bigger than, you know, MLS. I think that's too easy. I mean, you look at someone like Walker Zimmerman. Okay, he's been around for a while. I get that. But he's an MLS guy to the core. And is Walker Zimmerman our best center back right now? Maybe.
You know, I think he's a college draft MLS player on top of it.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I think this speaks to a, I'm just going to say, a generational shift. where we looked at MLS guys maybe that came out 10, 15, 20 years ago. It's just different now. I think the game is more global. Guys see, interact with other folks who have been around. The game's just different now. And so I think guys who come up, and I'm not saying, you know, Walker Zimmerman's not 21, but, you know, even guys who have been raised in MLS now, they have different mindsets. They're cockier, you know, they're more willing to get stuck in. They get on stages like this and they don't seem like it's too big for them. And so I think you look at this group in particular, and I think that that's notable. I think up and down the lineup, the stages didn't seem too big for anyone, you know, whether they were someone like Musa, who's, you know, 19, 20 years old, or someone like Walker Zimmerman, who may be older, but, you know, is a quote unquote MLS guy. And he, you know, in the past, those guys have been cowed by bigger stages, but clearly that's not the case. So I think, you know, it's hard to quantify, right? It's hard to quantify that, like, oh, they're cowed by the stage. But I think, you know, if I could look at the biggest shift in the last 5, 6, 7 years, especially amongst MLS guys, they get on these big international stages, and it doesn't look too big for them. And I thought, you know, you saw that up and down the lineup tonight.
Yeah.
Peter. No, yeah. I was just to follow up on Will's point, cause we, you know, you and I, cause we're a Dallas show, we talk a lot about the FC Dallas Academy and how good it's gotten. But I think Will's point is that really in the MLS in general, the money they have spent on developing the academies league-wide across all teams in MLS is really starting to pay dividends now, 10 years later, you know, after this project started, which was to spend more money on the youth development.
You know, I do want to take a second to highlight Walker, who, when I saw the lineup, I was somewhat surprised to see him starting at center back. And if I was worried about a position, it might have, well, in my mind, I was a little concerned about that. But man, he was so impressive tonight. I don't think he put a foot wrong that I can think of off the top of my head. And he was super strong, you know, marking Jimenez or whoever it was, you know, winning balls in the air. Really top quality performance from Zimmerman. And I might have even said he was man of the match if it hadn't been for one or two other guys on the field. So that is good. Now, what I do want to do, speaking about all these things that we just talked about, because he is the one that we have the most affection for and the one we're keeping an eye on, is tonight's performance of Ricardo Pepi, who, by the way, I just want to reiterate for everybody, wasn't even a part of this team 4 months ago, much less did we have any concept he was going to be starting for the U.S. in U.S. versus Mexico for a World Cup qualifier. So, Will, what did you think about Pepe's performance tonight?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, you know, you mentioned the recency of his involvement, and it's almost hard to remember that with how involved he's been over the last couple months. And you're like, okay, well, maybe I should pump the brakes on feeling like he should have completely arrived by now, because he still is a young kid and still is finding his footing. But you know, there's some good, some bad. You know, it's funny, the two of the guys with FC Dallas ties, Pepe and Zimmerman, if you would have gone into the game thinking, oh, well, Pepe's got a better chance to wow than Walker Zimmerman does, I thought it was kind of reversed. But, yeah. You know, again, there's some good and some bad. I thought, you know, the biggest thing for me, you know, and Jozy Altidore used to do this a lot, especially later in his career, is he used to really peel back if he wasn't getting direct service, because he wanted to be involved. He wanted to play 1-2s. He wanted to get in the box. You know, he's not a guy that really wants to, you know, feel like he wants to attach onto those long balls. Well, the problem with that is that he then, you know, sort of becomes part of the midfield, and he removes himself from the box where he's the most dangerous. And you saw it on Christian Pulisic's goal, where he had the chance to really step into the six and, you know, sort of take the bull by the horns, if you will. And, you know, Pulisic did that. And you expect that from Pulisic. You know, he's been on huge stages. He's played in a Champions League final. He's been everywhere you want to be. And so obviously he's going to be up for that moment. But that's where you want your nine to be. You want that number nine to really step into that moment, to be that sort of Lewandowski, seeking the goal, wanting to be around the ball, anticipating where Weah's cross was going to come. And, you know, hopefully he saw that as a teachable moment, you know, where you want to be where the danger is. You want to, you know, put your head in to where the ball's coming in. And he'll learn. You know, he's young. It's funny, you know, the way Pulisic has developed, you would think, you know, he's 15 years older. But, you know, we just have to remind ourselves, Pepe's still young. He's barely been in the national team scene, and so he'll learn those things. But a lot of teachable moments tonight. Not his best performance, but not – I certainly didn't think he was overmatched by the, you know, the temper of the game.
Andy, you know, you and I have spent a lot of time talking about Ricardo. What were your thoughts on his performance tonight?
Yeah, I thought he was just okay. You know, I was hoping for a better performance. This – look, just individually for him, this was a huge game just, because of all the background about him that we know about, right? His family, and he had to decide, and he's 18 and he's playing this particular game months after that big decision. Univision, I was watching the Univision pregame show, which, by the way, was 90 minutes long leading up to this big game where we had to, like, watch college football.
So just Andy about kickoff. That he's bilingual,
yeah,
by the way.
No. So they had a profile. They had like a 5-minute piece on him, you know, and his, you know, they talked to his dad at length, and his dad was very supportive of the decision. The Mexican media, very supportive of the decision. Everybody understands. So I think for him, psychologically, you know, it had to weigh on him. And, you know, that probably played a part in him not performing as well as we'd hope. It's funny that Will mentioned that run by Pulisic, because when Pulisic scored that goal, it was a great goal, but Pepe was right there, static. And I'm like, man, that is Pepe's run.
It is.
You know, that's his run to make. And hopefully one day we see him make that run.
You know, it's funny. We were hoping to have Buzz on tonight, and if he was here, because he's really the Pepe expert in many ways, I have a feeling what he would talk about is what Pepe generally needs. And Taylor Twellman, by the way, kept talking about this, where Pepe scores is within like 15 yards of the goal, and he needs direct service. And so Wea and Aronson and how that works with him, I still very much believe is a work in progress with Berhalter of figuring out, because if I felt like what the U.S. wasn't doing as a team that concerned me was that I kept seeing Aronson, I kept seeing Pepe, and even Wea to a degree, making smart runs into space behind, and the team just seemed to refuse to want to play that ball over the top or between the lines for whoever was making that run. And those are the type of runs that Pepe's really good at. And I just don't think he really got those opportunities tonight, along with some other things that maybe he wasn't doing. So, man, I just, the idea that he'd even started this game continues to blow my mind.
Talk about. And Peter, you know, I think when I think of Pepe's best use in this national team, I have been beating this drum for 5 years that Christian Pulisic is a number 10 for this national team. He needs to be central, and he needs to be breaking lines with through balls. And I know that that's not his role with Chelsea. I know that, you know, national team coaches are trying to fit guys into what they're comfortable. But hey, Pulisic played the 10 role for 4 years with the U.S. youth national teams. He played the 10 role on the U.S. youth national team scene with like four guys in this roster. So he can do it. And I think, you know, when you see him kind of playing those lines and those, you know, breaking those lines, I think that's exactly what Pepe needs. Yeah. That's what he, honestly, it's what he didn't have.
Yeah, no, I
man, I agree with Will. Pulisic is a 10. They couldn't play the 4-3-3, obviously. They'd have to go to like, what, a 4-2-3-1 or something like that.
Yep. But yep.
It'd be perfect for him. I agree.
Yep.
And really maybe the highlight, and if there's anything about tonight's lineup that just makes you feel so confident and hopeful and eager to see more of this, is the midfield trio that is now belovingly called the MMA, with Musa, McKennie, and Tyler Adams.
It was good today. I'm telling you, man. Adams struggled the first 10 minutes. I mean, it was very un-Adams-like, his passing, but after that, Adams was so solid. Like the usual Adams performance that we're used to by now, right? And Musa had a hell of a game, and of course McKennie with the goal. So,
yeah, all of them were top notch. Musa does have a bit of Pogba-itis in my head, where he lets people pressure him in odd situations, and he turns the ball over a little bit more than I like. But that seems to be everything else he does is so good and so smooth that you really want to forgive him for that stuff. But man, Weston McKennie, I mean, what an absolute dream player for the United States. He's that kind of guy we've all just been dreaming of having on a national team for at least my entire life, and we finally got the guy.
Will, we almost disowned him. You have to like fess up here, Peter, with Will, that we got very angry with our boy Wesson because, you know, he's one of ours. He's a local kid, but he's come back, man. He's back in good graces with us.
Yeah, when he had the suspension, Will, I was publicly very unhappy with him and chastising him on the radio.
Oh, gotcha. So then you've gotten over the fact that the boy from Little Elm flew the coop with no solidarity payments then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was.
Oh, yeah, no, we're not. We're like, hey, like, you got to do what you got to do, Will. We're no issues with that with us.
Okay. Yeah, listen, Weston's family made a very smart business decision. If it comes at the cost of Clark and Hunt, trust me, they got plenty of money with that. They didn't need that money, right? Yeah,
we don't want him kicked out of the national team. That's when we got mad.
Yeah, hooking up with his girlfriend and breaking COVID rules is what I was having an issue with. So.
Yeah, no, I got you. No, I think. You know, McKenny is like the perfect combination of Michael Bradley and Jermaine Jones. Like he's what
that's
kind
a
of
great
what
analogy.
He's kind of like what we wanted both of those guys to be in sort of one package, where he sort of has Jermaine's sort of roving try stuff attitude, but he's got, you know, Michael's ability to stay home and break stuff up and sort of be the calm sort of metronomic heart of the midfield. And he doesn't have to stay home because, you know, you've got Tyler Adams behind you, who's just sort of that, you know, Conte-esque, if I could even invoke that that name. I know he's sort of up on a pedestal, but, you know, he kind of has that, you know, motor, but also the ability to sort of recover. And so then you've got McKenny, who is able to roam in sort of that eight-ish role in the middle. You know, I think my concern isn't about Adams or McKenny, even when they do struggle, because their roles are going to coalesce. They're going to figure it out. We forget these guys are still in their early 20s. I mean, they're going to be playing together for another 10 to 15 years. Mm-hmm. So the question is what Moose's role is, and he's buttery smooth. I get that. But positionally, he's a little weird. And I don't know that I'm 100% on board with what he's doing as far as his heat map is concerned. And so he's still a teenager, right? So he's still figuring it out too. But I would really like to see him be a little bit more stay at home in the middle centrally, because again, that's what we talk about with this attack. Whether, you know, if you don't play Pepe at the nine, I don't know what you do. And if we play Pepe at the nine, we need someone in that kind of high central slot who's willing to sort of break lines and play through balls. And we just don't have that right now. Moussa kind of, you know, swings from side to side. And so if we're going to have some sort of creative role in the middle, you know, I would like to see that a little bit more. But that said, I mean, as far as that kind of central, you know, slot goes, McKenny and Adams, I mean, they're going to be there for years. I think the national team is in a really, really great spot, those two guys.
It's funny you mentioned that, and I actually have now, I'm looking at Moose's heat map right now, Will. So I'm going to ask you, if you had to tell me where you think his hot spot on his heat map tonight was, where do you think it is?
Ooh. Oh, put me on the spot. I'm going to say central left. I'm going to say he swung left.
I wouldn't have been able to tell you either. I'm somewhat surprised to tell you it's oddly almost all the way to the touchline, just inside midfield in the attacking half on the right side.
Right side, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that goes to it. I mean, he was swinging around, but yeah, I mean, that makes sense that he was on an extremity. And, I think you need someone in the middle in that sense. And, you know, he's kind of a roving playmaker, if you will. And, you know, you need someone, because McKenny is so unpredictable as far as where he goes, which you want, you need someone from a striker perspective that's going to be a little bit more stay at home.
Okay. So we love the midfield. We're happy about that. I guess the question becomes, how much of a concern is it that Weston did pick up a yellow card in this game? And we'll talk about that incident here in a second, but now is suspended for the game on Tuesday in Jamaica. Andy, does that concern you in any way?
No, I think this U.S. team has sufficient depth to be able to withstand the adversity of playing in Jamaica against a weak Jamaican team. Kellen Acosta, for one, can step in. We have other options in midfield as well. So I'm not too concerned about it. You know, Robinson being out, I think we're a little weaker perhaps out in the outside fullback area. Wouldn't you guys agree that maybe that's a little bit more concerning? Although I don't think one of you guys said
it's
Robinson.
It's the center back Robinson that got the two yellows in the red.
Oh, it is the center back. Okay. So, okay. Well, that's also concerning too, though, because I think Robinson and Zimmerman, that's a good pair. I guess Richard starts there now, right? It would be Richardson and Zimmerman at this point. Richards and Zimmerman?
I don't know. Will, who do you think he'll put in there? McKennie or Richards?
It should be Richards and Zimmerman because you still have Brooks who's muddling through an injury. So I would expect.
I don't think even Brooks. Is he in camp? Is Brooks in camp?
No. But McKennie is, isn't he? The kid that plays at Genk.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. So
the former Philadelphia Union. Yep.
Yes. So, man, I would love to see Chris Richards get a start in that game. That would be fantastic.
Speaking of Chris, I know this is not going to follow the flow that you wanted, Peter. I'm just going to throw this in there, but this reminds me, how many FC Dallas Academy players played today? Former FC Dallas Academy players played today because Richards is one of them. At any given time, there were five.
Holy
crap. No, six.
Who's the sixth?
Funes Mori on the Mexican side.
Yeah. Holy crap.
That's a deep cut.
Six players.
That is a deep cut, Andy.
Six players that wore that FC Dallas Academy uniform played in the biggest match of the year for the U.S. national team today. That's pretty strong.
If Dan Hunt is listening, he just gave you a fist pump for.
Yeah, there you go. Come on, you should be proud of that.
I am proud of that. I'm incredibly proud of it. I think it's amazing that's the case. Then Walker Zimmerman, who by the way was a draft pick of Dallas and played his first three years in Dallas, I'd say something like that. Okay, so let's talk about that incident, because if there was a moment in the game where I started to get a little bit concerned, it was the weird incident where Aronson gets fouled, and what is the name of the Mexico player, the bald guy? I don't know his name off the top of my head.
Do you guys? We can just call him Bald Guy.
Bald Guy with the bad chin hair. We'll call him Chin Hair. How about that? Is it Edson Alvarez? No, it's not Edson Alvarez.
No, it's not Alvarez. I'm trying to remember
his name. I forget. Well, anyway, while you look that up, Andy, what I'm really interested in. Oh, Luis Rodriguez. Yeah, it's Rodriguez. So he fouls Aronson, and he's kind of like straddling him. And as Aronson's getting up, he literally reaches down and tries to pick Aaron up like a bowling ball in the eyeball. And that creates a whole ruckus because Weston sees that particular moment of it. The ref clearly doesn't. And Weston kind of gets super angry and ultimately ends up getting a yellow card in that. But I do feel like out of all of that, are we bothered by the fact VAR isn't around to identify that as a red card? And then two, I do feel like there was a significant momentum shift for the next 5-10 minutes where for the first time it felt like almost the entire game Mexico started sniffing around and retaining possession outside the U.S. area.
I think my fear was that it was just minutes away from turning into one of these very CONCACAF games, and the referee loses control, and it was going to turn into that. And it didn't. Ultimately, everything, you know, I think things calmed down. And as it relates to VAR, we're all in agreement that CONCACAF should have VAR, and they should have had VAR for the qualifiers. Now, they don't, so I think let's just move on, because, like, Taylor Twellman today was driving me nuts. He's complaining about how can we not have VAR? We need VAR. And then 2 minutes later, he's like, and they're thinking of bringing back VAR in January. How can they then change to VAR in the middle of the qualifiers? Well, do you want it or do you not want it? You know, so like I'm just over the whole VAR talk, I guess. We know it's bad that they don't have it. Let's move on.
Well, here's the thing, too, is that, you know, this is what every U.S. Mexico game that I can, and you know, I guess you can zoom out and just say rivalry games sort of writ large is about. I mean, the first incident is never the one that's the problem. It's the reaction. And for you to not know that, I mean, because unless you've got cameras pointed on it and they're going to go back under a hood and look at it, which you know that they're not going to do in this particular instance, you know that the only thing the referee is going to see is the second, third, and fourth instance. And so, you know, you just have to be on your game. And, you know, it is a game. All this interaction and back and forth, it's part of a game. You know, this isn't, you can't view this as like a whim kind of thing. Like, you're playing a game. The yellows are a game. The card accumulations are a game. It's all part of this. And so you got to be smart about it. And it's an instigation thing. You know, initially, I thought, you know, especially on second glance, you know, I can't predict what Paxton Aaronson was physically feeling. But when he started going to the ground and holding his hand, you know, holding his face, I thought, good sell. You know, I thought, okay, yeah, like that's what he needs to do. I can't predict, you know, maybe he really was, you know, poked deep in his eye and was really feeling it, but like he was doing what he needed to do. And, you know, that's part of it. And so, you know, Weston needs to let that play out and not get in someone's face and start pushing and shoving, because that in and of itself might have drawn something.
That's the difference, I guess, with Mexico having that older roster, and we have a bunch of young guys, right? Yeah.
Yep.
And can we spend a few minutes talking about Brendan Aaronson? Because he, man, that kid, I swear, has three lungs. And his willingness to press and pressure and do it in smart ways and get the support of his teammates was one of my favorite parts about the game tonight, was just his relentlessness. And I'm really looking forward to see him, his career path, and not just what he does for the national team, but what is coming for him as he finds his way up the food chain over in Europe.
Yeah. I called him Paxton earlier. That's actually his younger brother, which is funny that popped out. But it's interesting, you know, and again, I think this is all part of the chess match that Greg Berhalter gets in his head. You know, you mentioned earlier that he can overthink things. And I think that that is Greg's biggest enemy, is his cerebralness, if you will. I think he thinks things through, and he thinks it through again, and he thinks it through again. And, you know, that can be good and it can be bad. And so, you know, you look at Aaronson's role, you know, wide left. It was good in some ways. You know, certainly that's a role that, you know, he's played at Salzburg. So he's comfortable with it. But, you know, you look at it within the construct of the team as a whole, you know, he pinches in a lot. And then you've got, you know, Anthony Robinson behind him as a fullback. Well, Robinson was pretty exposed because Aaronson's not doing a ton of tracking back early on until he sort of recognized it. And that's part of the, you know, the chess game. And he recognized it and had, you know, Aaronson tracking back a little bit more in the second half and covered that half. And so I think it's all part of that game. But I think, you, like you mentioned, his motor is just unbelievable. And I think if you get Aaronson and Pulisic, you know, on the field at the same time and try to figure that out, maybe you get Pulisic in that central 10 role and you get Aaronson out wide left kind of pulling in as that inverted winger type. I mean, man, that is that's a lot of energy coming into the 18. So the fact that the U.S. even has weapons like this, young weapons that can play together like this, I mean, it's hard. I feel that old kind of slap on the back of the hand, like, don't get too excited. Remember 2018, but like, it's hard not to. The young talent here is undeniable.
Yeah. And you haven't even mentioned Reyna, who, you know, where do you stick him in all that? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm telling you, a lot of people wanted to spend a lot of moment and a lot of time talking about Christian Pulisic's move and run to score that opening goal. But we really need to spend a few minutes talking about Timothy Weah's move to create the space and skin his defender so that he could get that perfect cross in. And man, if there's a guy that I don't really see play a lot, because he's playing over, I think he's playing in the French league, right? I just don't see play a lot, but I just really enjoy watching him play soccer, is Timothy Weah. And I, like, once you start getting guys back, I don't know who has to sit, but goodness gracious. Yeah.
Was he man of the match today? He probably a candidate, right?
Will?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
I think, you know, you look at, I thought it was Weah, it was Musa, and it was Zimmerman and Yedlin was a guy that we haven't mentioned. Those were the kind of my four standouts that I thought.
Yedlin, interesting.
Okay, see, now I might pick on you about picking DeAndre, because I thought DeAndre was really sloppy in certain places, but he was also the guy that made the absolutely lung-busting run to cover on that one breakaway in the first half, let Lozano, kind of forced Lozano and not to the shot I think he wanted that Stefan saved. And that was really Yedlin making that run back. What was it about his game that you thought was worthy of consideration?
So here's the thing. Here's the thing. I guess I should couch this. Everything is relative, right? And so you go in thinking DeAndre Yedlin is a certain way, and he had, I think, three through balls that actually found their target and sort of opened up the back line and sort of created. Created a gap. And I know that that may not seem like a big deal, but for DeAndre Yedlin, certainly that was a big deal. And so, you know, he had a couple crosses that sort of hit their mark. He had a couple, a couple runs, a couple recoveries that he doesn't normally have. I'm not saying he was, positively Alba-esque, if you will, but I thought he was quite good. Was he the best player on the field? I don't necessarily think so. But for Yedlin, I think that's about as good as you're going to see him.
You know what's really interesting, and it's very telling about the performance of the U.S. today, and I think what a clear victory it was. We've mentioned Zimmerman, Adams, Weah, Musa, McKinney, Yedlin, Aronson as all having a vote for being man of the match. That's like seven guys that we've said are, and we haven't talked about Robinson in the middle. Mm-hmm. I don't think outside fullback Robinson had a great game today. And then we've talked about Pepe and he was so-so. But really to have so many performances be as strong as they were, and in such an important game, I think it just really solidifies the, what the result was.
You know,
I'm not trying to be MLS guy here, but a couple MLS Academy guys in there.
Sure. Yeah, yes.
There's plenty
course.
Of them in there. Aronson, by the way, is an MLS Academy guy, right?
I mean, yes.
Don't forget yes. that. That's a big. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm completely in agreement with you. ESPN in their pregame show was trying really, really, really hard to stir up controversy in the goalkeeper position. They spent an entire segment talking about how Berhalter had muddied the water by going back and forth between Stefan and Turner and who was the starting keeper, and was there, some angry feelings about it. Was really weird how hard they were working at that. I'm a big Matt Turner fan. Stefan, to me, on occasion, is just a little too lackadaisical on the ball, a little too overconfident. But I have to say, he was fantastic tonight. And even his overly confident play on the ball really played well in breaking the little bit of the press that Mexico was trying to do.
So when you say you're a Turner fan,
I am.
Does that mean you're Turner over Stefan?
Yes, I do prefer Matt Turner to Zach Stefan.
Yes, Will, we want the MLS guy, not the second string EPL guy.
Well,
because I'm a Turner guy as well.
Andy, calm down. You're clipping the tape.
All right. Well, then I'll be the resident Stefan guy on here. You know, I think the tape on Stefan has always been pretty much what you saw tonight. Where he is a phenomenal shot blocker, unbelievable reflexes, really seems to struggle as far as distribution, not really sure where he wants to go with the ball, especially in short distribution, which is funny that he's found his way into a Pep Guardiola system.
It's so mysterious to me.
Because that's the number one attribute he looks for in a keeper.
Yeah, which is where it is literally the number one thing that he looks for in keepers. And so clearly he sees something in Stefan that he wants to develop, because he's got to look at him in training all the time, even if he doesn't start him hardly ever. And so that's the question that you have to ask, is what is Stefan picking up from City? Is he picking up enough that you feel like he can compensate for you know, some of the issues that he's had. He certainly didn't dispel, you know, the doubters tonight. I mean, he didn't sort of figure all that out. But I thought he was good enough that you take his shot stopping over some of those issues. And in my opinion, his shot stopping is better than anything Turner does.
Really? Okay. Well, what I would say is that in some of the recent appearances by Stefan, I thought some of his balls out of the back were, again, a little lackadaisical, a little overconfident, a little wayward. I can only think of one ball that he played out of the back that he spit out way too shallow, and I think Robinson had to try to track back and get it and missed it and turned it over for a throw-in. That's the only one I can think of. And, man, he's so brave about playing that simple, smart, vertical ball on the ground 20 yards to an open midfielder when there's, you know, two forwards collapsing in on him. That's that pass that makes you kind of like your ass clench because you're like, what are you doing? And then it clears those two forwards, and there's just acres of space for a midfielder to turn and go, right? And that's, yeah. I think when you're talking about, well, that's what we're seeing out of him that he's getting from his time at City.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, for all of what we think of Pep as this, you know, tiki-taka 2009 Barca, if you look at his City teams, they're more vertical than I think most people think they might be, if that's all you kind of think of. And so I think it's that sort of direct, like you're saying, 20, 25 yards, you know, maybe just shy of the halfway line, where they can kind of turn and burn, and it's fine. It's like a, you know, if I could make an American analogy here, it's like a quarterback finding those pockets, you know, where you can see that your receiver has space to turn and go. I mean, he's pretty good at that. I think what he's got to get better at is the short passing. You know, it's the using his feet, you know, mm-hmm. using the inside of his foot. I think that's where he's maybe a little bit lackadaisical at times. But, you know, I think in keeper years, just like dog years, you know, he's still pretty young, so he's got some time to grow up. But, you know, he's where, in my opinion, where he should be. I think, you know, he's certainly no Tim Howard at that age. I thought, you know, certainly Tim was further along and maybe even some keepers early on. But, you know, that's one area where I think we may be a little spoiled. And so I think, you know, he's more than serviceable for that position. And I in my opinion, there's no real question about who should be the number one, but I'm a Stefan guy. So,
all right. Well, fair enough. We all have our favorites. And you know what, if I can't have Matt Turner, a guy playing in the Premier League on occasion, isn't a bad backup to have. Right. I do want to turn our focus a little bit on Mexico, because this is an interesting qualifying campaign where, you know, they've consistently been at the top of the table. I think this is their first loss of the tournament so far, at least at this round of it. But I am I wrong in saying that the overall vibe and the sense that Mexico is not running very smoothly? Is it fair for me to say that we all kind of agree that they're not playing at full tilt at this point?
Yeah, well, I would agree. I think I don't think they were very good in that second. Or, you know, I don't want to take credit away from what the U.S. did in that second half.
I just mean this whole entire qualifying tournament. I mean, they've sputtered here and there. They haven't, you know, I don't think they've had a really smooth run of it.
No, but I think life is harder for Mexico these days in CONCACAF too. You have the U.S., clearly a team on the rise with a good young roster, and a Canada team that, you know, is surprising many because of the way they play. You know, and I think the middle of the pack, the CONCACAF middle of the pack is getting a little bit closer to Mexico, and you know they're not the far and away front runner that they're used to being for the last 34 years.
Will,
yeah. I don't think that'll ever come back for them.
Will, how much of this is down to the bad hoodoo they're getting for not wearing green anymore and wearing those awful black and fuchsia kits?
I tell you, they're going to hear about that. Tune in to the Mexican press tomorrow. You're going to see some Verde comments. I guarantee you, it happens. Every
they're going to want Tata out. I mean, he's yeah, Tata, yeah. There's a lot of
here's the thing. I think Mexico's in a tough spot because they are sort of in between generations right now, where they had, you know, for a while, they heard so long about that Chicharito, Dos Santos generation sort of meshing with the Marquez generation that was on its way out, and they were on their way in, you know, early 2000s, mid 2000s. And, you know, that was the Mexico that an entire generation of American players grew up with. Well, now they're kind of in an awkward spot, while at the same time, the U.S. national team generation is, I mean, some people have called it a golden generation. You call it whatever you want, but you've got a entire cadre of extremely talented early 20s, you know, late teen American players coming up at the same exact time.
They got to play a World Cup before we call them golden generation.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's say in the making.
Yes, I say that with a heavy, heavy dose of italics. Right. But, you know, it is a very good generation, we'll say that. And so I think Mexico does not have that at the same time. And so they are really in between. And so certainly they've got quality players. You know, I think the thing with Mexico that you always look at, yes, you line up player for player, you know, certainly you could argue that the talent is there, but it's always been, can they come together and play the same style at the same time? And, you know, that's always been the issue. And so, you know, I don't know that it's that easy anymore to say, okay, you line up Mexico and American players player for player, that they're that much better anymore. You know, yep. I really don't think you can do that just like you could 10, 15 years ago even. And so I think that's part of the sort of the reckoning that Mexico has to have, that, you know, it's sort of like a, again, to make a good old American analogy, it's like you can't take the Texas is back thing every 5 minutes. Like, maybe Mexico's just not back. Maybe this is just the way it is now, that, yep, you know, American players are just on par with Mexican players now. You just have to deal with it.
I would say more American players, at least on this roster, play in Europe than Mexico. Not that that's the end all, right? I mean, but more U.S. players play in Mexico and in Europe than Mexican players at the moment. Correct?
Yeah, and they talked about this a lot on the broadcast. They kept bringing up this stat, which is this is the first time in CONCACAF history that a team has beaten another team three times in a calendar year since like the 30s.
Oh wow! I thought it was the U.S. beating Mexico. I didn't realize it was a.
Is it just U.S. and Mexico?
Yeah, first time in the U.S.-Mexico rivalry, yeah.
Ah, okay. Well, it's still an amazing stat that happened and pulled off. And by the way, just to put some numbers on it, talking about the differences, the average age of Mexico's starting 11 tonight was 29 years old. The average age of the U.S., 23.5 years old. Let that soak in for a little bit.
Mexico's not back.
No. Mm-hmm. All right.
Just saying.
Now, let's talk about the overall not to get too sentimental or mushy about this, but goodness gracious, as somebody, and again, I like to brag about this, I was actually at the original 2-0 game in 2002 in Columbus, Ohio. I was there that brutally cold night, and it was one of the greatest nights of my life. And for 2-0 to become a thing and now find a new home in Cincinnati, and with this new generation of players, and as Berhalter tries to cement his position as manager of this, Will, what do you think this victory in particular means for the program?
You know what's very interesting about that question? And so I was watching player reactions after this game, and I have not gone back to watch player reactions in 2002. I think that was Brian McBride and, you know, that group. Yeah. You know, that was a very different time in American soccer. You know, obviously, 2002 was a sort of a monumental year for U.S. soccer for a number of reasons, especially in the aftermath of the disaster of 98. But, you know, I was watching Christian Pulisic after that game. You know, obviously he's the one that scored the goal, you know, has, you know, everything to play for, is sort of the figurehead of the national team. Almost no reaction at all. He's sort of dourly high-fiving. You know, he's excited to a degree, but he's sort of like on to the next one. And, you know, I thought that was kind of instructive, as far as the, you know, what this means to them. You know, I think, you know, you have a lot of players that have played in some big games, and that's not to say that this was not a big game, but I think, you know, sort of to Andy's point before as far as the perspective that these players have, you know, the big game experience that these players have. I don't think that they look at Mexico the same way that American player in 2002 looked at Mexico. And I think that's part of the reason why they played like they did, is I don't think that they feel like it's quite this sort of Mount Everest that they did maybe 15 or 20 years ago. And I think that contributes, you know, you saw, again, look at the way Musa played. Like, he was so calm and composed and smooth. You know, a lot of these younger players who, you know, maybe 15 years ago, you put a 19, 20-year-old on the field in Mexico, they looked jumbled. They looked, you know, they were playing really fast. They were playing, you know, sort of poor balls. And now, you know, it's just sort of like, yeah, Mexico on a Friday night, no big deal. And so I think that sort of informs the way that I feel like this team looks at Mexico. We're like, yes, it's a big deal. It's a rivalry game. We get up for them. We want to, you know, beat the heck out of them. But hey, it's another game. You know, this was not a World Cup final. This was not a Champions League final. And so I think it's a big step for American soccer. I think it's to look at this game as another game and not the game. I think that's why we might be looking at more wins like this in the future.
All right, Andy, you are our official CONCACAF insider, our regional expert, our neutral on all of this. And you know what, to be fair, Andy, you always have really interesting perspectives on this because you have a better lay of the land in terms of what this means in the region and the significance of it. So I am really interested to hear what you think about tonight's result and what it means on the larger scale.
Yeah, so to Will's point, it was very much a feeling, at least that came out of the U.S. camp, that you know, they were taking care of business. And business was taken care of, and a result other than the win would have been disappointing. I don't think we would have said that back in that first original 2-0 win. And the other thing to look at is how you personally felt after each of these two wins, or the first 2-0, the first dos a cero, and this one. And I think you, Peter, you were probably a lot more excited, and I think us as a soccer nation were much more excited about that first one because it was more unexpected. And it was more the first time that happened. And then they got a couple more after that. I think the importance of today, more than anything, was the win because of what happened in the last cycle and not qualifying for the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, okay, you know, order is kind of restored. We started to win these games at home against Mexico. You know, that was a matter of course. And we've restored that order because the first one they lost after these series of wins at home against Mexico was the one in the last cycle. And that led to them not qualifying for the World Cup. So I think more than anything, it just kind of reinforced our notion that we're in good shape in this cycle and everything's going to be okay. And it's not, we're not smoking mirrors and, you know, we're not struggling. We are clearly, now we're in first in this group. And things are looking good. I think that's the feeling to get out of this game.
Yeah, and not to completely repeat in ways what both of you said. The first one in 2002 was very much underdogs just getting a win and being excited that you beat the big dogs in the group, right? This one, to me, feels more like a group of guys standing up and saying, hey, we got this. This isn't one-off. This is for us to now expect to do on a regular basis. And considering mm-hmm. they've beaten them three times this calendar year, whether it be a B team or an A team or in a qualifier, they've done it. They've faced that Mexican team and put them down three times in a row. So I
would even say it was a stronger win against the A team today than it was in the summer.
I agree. Yeah. No. It is a statement win in a lot of ways. And if you start thinking about the math, it almost certainly seals their position for a World Cup spot in Qatar. Although, like Will started all this with, we got to be careful about sticking our hand in the trap, right? We gotta stay away from that. But man, it certainly does feel good. So the other results tonight are interesting in many ways because at one point there was a stunning score up on the board. At one point, Honduras was beating Panama 2-0 in Honduras. And then they flipped it up 45 minutes later, and somehow Panama came back and scored three, because that was really going to help the United States' position if Honduras had gotten that upset, and they didn't. Andy, your Canada, at some point, got a goal against Costa Rica at home.
Yeah, I had the game on, by the way, on my iPad while I was watching the U.S. game. It was pretty even first half, and then the second half, Canada, I think, was the better team, and Alphonso Davies, of course, scored the goal.
Of course.
So, yeah.
Yeah, by the way, don't forget, after this, Tata Martino and Mexico have to go to Edmonton in Canada and face them in that game.
You know what? Today was like the high was 40. No precipitation. I was kind of disappointed. It's like, Costa Rica can handle this. You know, they played the snow game in Denver, remember, against the U.S., but hopefully they get some snow before Mexico visits.
Well, the one story I will tell from the original Dos Acero game that I think people forget is that, and I will never forget this, is that, you know, in the hour prior to kickoff, the U.S. came out and warmed up, and Mexico did not because it was so cold. And Mexico didn't come out for the game until maybe 10 minutes prior to kickoff. And that's where the whole idea of playing this in a foul weather area just really cemented it for me. So when I think about that, now them having to go to Canada, where it's probably going to be even colder, makes you wonder how they feel about that whole setup.
Yeah, no, my good friend Paul Carr, who worked at ESPN Stats for a number of years, what is the U.S.'s record against Mexico in temperatures under 50 degrees? I was just curious.
If anybody's going to know it's Paul Carr.
Yeah, that's right.
And of course, Paul goes into his Hogwarts library of American soccer stats and pulls out the U.S. is 2-1 against Mexico in under 50 degree temps. The one was the 2016 game. And of course, the 2002 game was one of the two.
Not
a whole lot of opportunities, which is a little disappointing. I think if I am, scheduling those games, I put it up in Alaska or something.
or at least Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
We need a new national stadium in Anchorage.
I mean, just do it. Like get some cold weather in there. Gotta pump up the chances.
That would be so awesome to have our national stadium in Anchorage, Alaska. You know, when you say Paul has a library, see, I assumed Paul was like that character in Dune that calculates math in his head and his eyes roll back in his head and the whites of his eyes show up. That's what I thought Paul Carr did. So I'm disappointed to find that it's actually in paper form. So, all right. So the other result tonight was El Salvador getting a point against Jamaica at home. And now the standings look like this. The good old USA sits atop the group on goal differential with 14 points. Mexico right behind them. And then Canada with 13 and Panama with 11. So these top four really have separated themselves because now between Panama and four and Costa Rica in five is a 5-point gap. Costa Rica, Jamaica, El Salvador all tied with 6 points and Honduras sitting at the bottom with 3 points. So the U.S. next has one more game in this two-game window. They traveled to Jamaica. So, Andy, where will they play on Tuesday in Jamaica? Anything about that particular facility? And also maybe remind everybody that they're playing about their crowd limitations, please.
Yeah, they're playing in Kingston, and Jamaica has been very strict with their COVID protocols. It's very difficult to travel into Jamaica unless you're going for tourism, and you have to stay in designated tourist areas if you do. Just working a match in Jamaica is difficult. You have to go through a lot of protocols and rigmaroles to get in the country. But, you know, for the U.S., I mean, everything's already set up. The U.S., they'll go in. They're really good about traveling now in CONCACAF. They have it down, as you say. They have it down. They have it down to how they approach the hotel and the facilities and how many floors they actually rent. They go for overkill and rent more of the hotel than they need to just to give themselves more privacy than they're used to. So they have all this down now. The field may be an issue in Jamaica, depending on the weather as well. You know, it can always be dicey weather in the Caribbean, just like it can in Central America. But I'm not too concerned about trying to get a result in Jamaica. I think this team's playing with confidence. And Jamaica's not very good, honestly. And I think we should expect the 3 points.
Well, just to throw out there, Will, because I talked about this a lot, that it would just be the U.S. luck that they'd start to get all their good players back from the Premier League. And look who scored their goal tonight. Mikel Antonio, the West Ham striker, that has decided to play for Jamaica. He subs into the game and scores in the 82nd minute. Now, it was also Alex Roldan, Christian Roldan's brother, that scored in the 90th minute to tie the game for El Salvador. So
so who gets Antonio? Is it Zimmerman? Walker?
Yeah, who? I mean, who's going to mark that beast?
Richards.
Yeah.
Yeah, and no, you know, like we were saying, no Miles Robinson, no Weston McKennie. So, you know, you hope Christian Pulisic is feeling pretty good, and you roll the dice.
You're not going to freak always, out. You're not freaked out about those two guys missing for Jamaica, are you, Will?
I mean, Jamaica's. Look, I will say this: Jamaica's not as bad. They're not playing as bad as they did when they came here. So I'm not saying that it shouldn't be a win. I'm just saying it perhaps is not going to be quite as easy.
That as easy as it make it out to be. That's fair. Exactly. Now, perspective. We're halfway through the octagonal, seven games played. U.S. is sitting in first place. Like, if they, you know, before all this started, if they would have said, hey, will you take this? Of course you take it, right? So, and the other important thing, Peter talked about it, there's really a gap now between the top four and the bottom four. It's a pretty big gap for this, for being this far into the cycle. I think now what the U.S. is playing for, I mean, man, I don't want to get too cocky here, but it's really avoiding that fourth spot. Right, because the fourth spot leads to a playoff, and anything can happen.
Were you telling him to stop doing that, sticking his hand in there? Were you telling him to quit doing that?
Hey, look, I can get on board with that. It's just, you know, even me, you start saying, oh well, you know, draws are okay. We can deal with the draws. I start thinking, you know, I start getting a little nervous.
Draw on the road.
You're probably right, but it's a little nervy.
Hey, look, if you win at home and draw on the road in this window, that's not a bad result out of this, especially because Mexico has to go to Canada. So
the U.S. at home, they still have to play. They get at home the bottom two teams, El Salvador and Honduras. Just having those two teams be your home matches that you have left. That's huge.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
so
a really good point. Yeah. Good point.
You got to think that's about 4 points right there. So.
Hey, come on.
Before we finish this up, I want to talk about a couple of off the field things. Man, I really love that stadium. I think that TCL stadium in Cincinnati, I know they got a really shitty MLS team in there, but what a sweet facility that is. And I think it's a great place to play national team games. Did you guys have any thoughts?
Can we talk about the light show stuff? What do you guys think about all that with the lights dancing on and off?
Please tell me you're not anti light show bit guy. Please tell me.
I'm not saying anything. I'm crowdsourcing the idea.
Andy and I talk about fan experiences and game day experiences a lot. And I think in 2021, that stuff plays really, really well. And if anybody is against the idea of blinky LED lights, either on the inside or the outside, my question is, have you experienced it in person? You know, the stuff they pull off down at that new stadium in Austin, Andy and I experienced in person for the Dallas Austin game. And I thought it translated really well. I thought it helped add to the atmosphere. And I think that the stuff they're doing on the outside of that stadium is really kick ass, but that's just me.
Yeah, I agree. I like what they were doing in Austin, but part of it wasn't because it wasn't overkill. It was, you know, they picked their moments. It was all like having to do with the color green and the theme, and it was done right. And I think what Will is probably alluding to is like overkill and just like this being a laser light show as opposed to like a soccer match, right? Well, and so there's a balance to strike.
Right. And so here's part of my the preamble to this. So as many American soccer fans will know, we got treated to Cincinnati football against South Florida beforehand. Instead of having a wonderful pregame show that Andy was able to bilingually take in, many of us were stuck watching a very mediocre AAC football game beforehand. And so a South Florida player is going in for a touchdown, steps out of bounds at the 2-yard line, seems to score a touchdown, does not, and the light show starts going off. No touchdown, the guy stepped out of bounds, everybody's going back to the huddle, and the light show is just going bananas. And they're all huddling, and they're like, what is happening here? And so lead into American soccer scoring one of the biggest wins in the last 5 years of the program. We got light shows going off, and I'm like, well, you know, that was a fun preamble. I have no problem with it, but I do think it is possible that it can go a little overboard.
Yeah, over the top. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
It's possible. All right, last thing. Somebody tell me why Taylor Twellman is wearing a puffer jacket under his blazer.
I'm out on
so
this.
So here's, you could have stopped at, why is Taylor Twellman? And then could have had many, many conversations. Yeah. But yes. Yeah.
Okay. I want to be fair to Taylor, because I strongly believe this, and I've talked about this a lot. There are a ton of things that annoy me to no end about Taylor. Some of them are his lack of journalistic professional traits. But the one thing I think he is really good at is in-game tactical real-time analysis. I think he's really good at picking out moments in a game and communicating in simple terms what he just saw to people, because we have to remember there are a lot of people watching these games that aren't longtime soccer watchers, right? And I do think that is his one really, really good value. I wish he'd just do that and not all the other Stephen A. Smith stuff that he keeps trying to do, that some ESPN consultant keeps telling him to try to pick up on. If he just focused on the one thing he's good at, man, I think he'd be one of the best in the business.
What does all have to do with the jacket?
I don't know. I don't know why. I just.
Oh, I thought you were going to bring it full circle.
Well, it does make me wonder. Like, if you're standing in your hotel room and you're like, it's chilly outside, I should put on a puffer jacket. But wait, I have a blazer. And where do you get a? And who? How many people in the world have a blazer as an option big enough to go over a fucking puffer jacket?
Must have been cold.
If I could pull it off, I would. Although I don't think he pulled it off. But no, I think you're right. I think, you know. The thing that constantly impresses me about Twellman, such as it does, is that he generally has his finger on the pulse of like top performances. And so he's rarely wrong about who's like generally good and who's not. Now, you could say that's not very impressive for a career soccer guy to kind of have his finger on the pulse of that, to know like, okay, yeah, he's generally like going to be a man of the match, you know, that he can point out, okay, yeah, Zimmerman's shifting is good there. But I think in the world of broadcast journalism, especially on that level, I think sometimes you have to take what you can get. And I think, Twellman's an American voice. And, you know, I think he does reasonably well for what they ask him to do. And what they ask him to do is occasionally yell a lot.
Yeah.
Just curious, who did he pick as man of the match today? Did he say?
I don't remember hearing him say.
Okay. All right. Because there are so many options, I'm just curious.
And by the time the game ended, I was scurrying up here to get this thing organized so I can, because I needed to talk to somebody, and my buddies Will and Andy were waiting for me to set the recording up. So, okay, so America 2, Mexico 0. I just can't believe I'm saying this again, but I can't believe it's happened again in a World Cup qualifier. It is quite unbelievable that this has happened. Will Parchman from The Athletic, and a good educator and an all-around kick-ass soccer media guy. Man, I really appreciate you making yourself available tonight to record this with us just minutes after the game, man. It's cool to have you on.
Hey, love doing it. Love talking for the P1s. Love talking with you guys.
Thanks so much, Will. And Andy, I know we don't get to do a show tomorrow, but this was a cool way to fill a weekend when we get bummed from SMU football, right?
It was long. It was as long as a regular show, too, it seems like. We've been talking forever.
Yeah, well, we've been a little over an hour.
Big game, though. Not bad. Big game.
Excellent game. And congratulations to Canada for getting its win tonight. Yep. Mm-hmm. And we're rooting for Canada on Tuesday, Andy.
Are you? Why? Who are? Oh, yeah, right. They play Mexico, of course. Mexico. Duh. Yeah, thank you. That's nice. When do we play next, by the way? I'm looking to see.
Tuesday.
No. The U.S. When does the U.S. visit Edmonton? 30th of January. Yeah, 30th of January. 30th, the Edmonton. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the game where I will wrestle in.
Yeah.
Chile.
Yeah. I don't know if they're going to go to. I don't know if they're going to go to Toronto or if they're going to take them to Edmonton. We'll see.
I'm sure it'll be chilly, as Will said, no matter where it is.
Yes.
And maybe I'll even break out my puffer jacket.
And put a coat over it. All right. Very good.
Thanks again, guys. And thank you, P1s, for listening. We love and adore you. Don't forget to go on out there and get stuck in